This One Up podcast is brought to you by Hail to the Chimp from Gamecock Media. Hail to the Chimp is a fast-paced party game about 10 animals fighting to become the next ruler of the animal kingdom. Packed with bare-knuckle brawling, lush interactive environments, and a talking woodchuck, it's the best selection you'll see this year. Available June 24th on PS3 and Xbox 360.
You're listening to GFW Radio. 97.5. The Brodeo.
Our dumb idea was to concoct absurd game designs and then pose as what we called a product recognition group that we were calling the Merchants of Cool, and to go outside of a Berkeley game store and survey people that were, you know, entering and exiting the building, ask them for a moment of their time to listen to these ideas, and then to give us some feedback on whether or not they're excited to buy them.
Hey, do you have a second for a video game survey? Do you have a second for a video game survey?
Like a marketing survey about games or...
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks.
We go and stand out front of the store. We considered, you know, getting a lanyard, bringing a bag of goodies to give people, ideally wearing a suit, except with like a game product t-shirt tucked in underneath, and gave up on all that and just dressed ourselves because we're pretty much game nerds as is. Didn't take any extra work. But we did get a clipboard and a pen, and we produced some survey sheets that were with, you know, with a letterhead on them, did all this stuff in InDesign so that it looked official.
All right. So we're from a product recognition group called the Merchants of Cool, and basically what we do is we represent some games that are coming out really soon, and we just want to see if people are aware of them and what they think. And so the game I want to tell you about is called Tender Rondo, The Sensitive Saga. It's for the Xbox 360. This one's called Tender Rondo, The Delicate Saga.
Yeah.
And it's based on an anime, which is like a Japanese animated series, and it's going to appear on the Cartoon Network here in 2009. It's about a highly sensitive and highly reluctant teen hero named Rondo, and he's fighting the Killjoy Corporation. They're basically draining the world's emotions to power a doomsday device. So
okay.
He uses his, you know, hyper-accentuated emotions to fight back.
So he's like a teenage boy, you know, super sensitive, kind of, you know, like an emo kid with big hair and, you know, a chip on his shoulder.
Sure.
And he uses his...
Tight black pants.
Exactly.
The way that it works is on the Xbox 360 controller, of course, the buttons are different colors. So those colors correspond to the different emotional attacks he has. Like red is the anger, green is envy, and you can steal items from people that way. Your sadness is blue, and that's when you want to run away from a fight. You don't want to, like, have to deal with it because you're not ready for
it.
And it's got music by the composer Hiroaki Kopotaki. He does a lot of the stuff for the Cartoon Network animated series. And that's about it for this one. Yeah, so what do you think?
That one sounds pretty cool.
It
seems
kind of
cheesy to me.
Like, okay, cheesy? That's okay. No,
The title's, like, translated directly from the Japanese. It's kind of weird. Does it seem weird?
Yeah, it just seems like the whole description, like he controls with his emotions, it seems kind of weird.
Maybe for some people, but
yeah,
not that many people.
I mean, it sounds kind of like every other video game.
Okay.
I mean, it's sounding like there's going to be something you have to stop, and it's going to be like any other Sonic the Hedgehog type game or anything from, like, hit and run to, you know, like, I'm trying to think. Let's see,
Does the title, it's translated from Japanese, appeal to you?
What's the title again?
Tender Rondo, The Delicate Saga.
I don't have strong feelings one way or the other about the title.
Okay. Have you ever watched anime on the Cartoon Network?
Sure, probably. A bit.
Has it affected you emotionally?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Do you identify with the character Rondo emotionally?
Oh, remember the vase that holds the
Do you feel like I could play this role? I could get into Rondo's shoes.
Yeah, probably. So wait, he's trying to stop these guys, right?
Yeah, he's the good guy. They're trying to steal all the emotion from this town.
Yeah.
If you could get a collector's edition of this game, which of the following items would you prefer would come with it? A collector's box, a pair of fingerless ninja gloves, a wall scroll featuring Rondo in a cherry blossom grove, or a CD soundtrack by Kokotaki?
I don't know. The finger.
Those ninja things are...
Ninja gloves.
Yeah. Okay. Probably get the ninja.
Cool.
I guess the... Wait, what was the first one?
The first one is just a nice box.
That sounds like it's probably the gayest game ever.
And I'm just going to give you a description of a game that's coming out in 2009, and then just get your opinion on the description we give. So it's called Duty Calls. It's available for more or less all platforms.
Oh, what system is it going to be on?
This one's going to be on 360 and PlayStation 3, PS2, and then the original Xbox.
It sounds...
Still make games for original Xbox?
They're
trying. Duty Calls. It's a first-person shooter for Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, or PC.
PC, PlayStation 2.
Is it like
Sony,
a ripoff
PSP.
Of Call of Duty, or?
Well, it's in the genre. I think they're definitely trying to use that name
feedback
recognition to their.
That'll
their
work
advantage.
To some degree, but I mean,
yeah,
it's a lot like Call of Duty 4, but there's some new stuff. This one's got an online multiplayer mode with up to 6 players. And it features an innovative new multiplayer mode called Capture the Flag, where there's, each team wants to get a flag from the other person's base and bring it back to their own base. It also uses what they call the Big Tech Engine, because a lot of first-person shooters like this, they'll just have really small graphics, and then they zoom in on them. In this case, they want to, how would you describe it, what they're telling us?
From what I understand, most games actually, they look normal size, but it's small, small guys zoomed in on, and this is like life size guys, like full size.
And then the other thing about it is that it allows you to fight in some of America's greatest conflicts, from the Bay of Pigs to the Panama invasion to the bombing of Libya and then the Desert One mission. And so based on this description, what are your general impressions of the game?
Sounds interesting.
Was there anything in particular that struck you about it that was the one thing that you found most interesting?
I like the different scenarios, like the Bay of Pigs and having different themes of battlefields to choose from.
So what are your general impressions on this game?
This sounds really cool.
More action.
Yeah. It sounds a lot better, cooler because of how you said it's more, you said everything's bigger. And
yeah.
it's more real.
Okay. Yeah.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
I guess I'd play it. It's Call of Duty 4. It probably seems pretty fun.
Yeah.
Because it's a good game.
Do you ever read previews of the games on the line or in magazines?
You're just on the back of the box.
Okay. So would you be interested in hearing more about the Big Tech Engine on the back of the box?
That would be something to add.
In any future marketing materials or previews in magazines or on the internet, would you like to hear more about the Big Tech graphics engine?
No, it's not that interesting. Is that particular to the small figures compared to the life-size figures?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would have to see it to get a better feel for it.
It's hard to describe, yeah.
Right. Does the title remind you of any other games that are out right now?
Call of Duty.
Yeah, Call of Duty.
Do you think that the name is close enough so that your parent might accidentally buy Duty Calls if you ask for Call of Duty?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
Bad.
Bad?
That happens.
Well, depending on it,
that happens to your mom buys the games that you don't know by accident.
What are some other games that the names have been too similar?
It's not. My mom's just bad at games. It's not really similar.
MVP baseball and MLB baseball.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good one. I've heard that. Which of the following haircuts would you prefer that the main character of Duty Calls has? A shaved head, a flat top with a fade and shaved stripes in the side, or just a helmet with a mysterious visor?
The helmet.
Oh, yeah.
The helmet.
I guess a helmet. them is Grace Visor. Be best.
I'll go with the helmet with the visor.
You have a G.I. Joe crew cut, Sergeant Slaughter crew cut. It's got to be, like, not as long as Guile, but like that. You know what I mean?
Close. Yeah, like Paul from Tekken.
Some verticality, so, yeah. But not, like, crazy.
Exactly. Right.
How enthusiastically, on a scale of 1 and 20, with 1 being the least enthusiastically and 20 being the most, would you pay full retail price for duty calls?
Probably
18.
16.
Probably 18.
Okay.
Probably 10 right now.
Okay, cool. So it's halfway there.
Lock and load, duty calls, surefire shooting, guts and balls, online mode, maybe best of all, big tech graphics ain't have it small,
have it small,
have it small,
have it small,
have it small, have it small.
Another game that's edutainment is called The Plagues of Egypt. It's for Nintendo Wii.
Just the title and the context sounds interesting.
Yeah?
Like this right here. I didn't never hear about this game before.
That's a good one.
But I thought Conan... I was like, I always wanted to know what happened.
Right.
You know, because in the last one, they were like, oh, he did this, and then that happened. And it was just like, but what happened all the time?
You like, well, the...
So it was the content is interesting. So that one sounds...
The content in this, though, is if it's going to matter if Moses is as exciting to you as Conan, because the Plagues of Egypt retells biblical stories from the Old Testament.
Yeah.
It combines the interactive gameplay.
That's smart, yeah.
We're from a product recognition group called The Merchant's Cool, and we're just going to tell you about a couple games that are coming out next year.
Okay.
And you tell us if you think they sound good or not.
Got it.
So the first one is called Plagues of Egypt. It uses the Nintendo Wii controller.
Yes,
you ever heard of a game, Zach and Wiki?
No.
What type of game is
it? It's called an adventure game, and it's based on the stories in the Old Testament, the Bible. So, like, they have David and Goliath battle. You take this controller in your hand, and you swing it around, and then let go of a button to throw the rock at Goliath. So in this game, Plagues of Egypt, it's about Moses in the Old Testament of the Bible. And so you'll have him, like, he'll turn his staff into a snake, and you put the Wiimote down, and it'll hiss from the microphone in it, and it'll shake and vibrate. Or, like, if you've heard of the parting of the Red Sea, so you take the nunchuck and the Wiimote, and you pull them apart, and then you smash them together. And it'll drown all the people that are in the water.
Oh.
So one thing, you paint blood on the door just to keep the angel of death from coming and killing the firstborn. So you take the remote and slash it off. Themes and encourage adventure gamers of all types.
Yeah.
So they want it to be a fun game no matter what.
Uh-huh.
So based on that, what are your general impressions of the game?
I think that I'm a high school teacher, mm-hmm. So I think that the boys I teach would be really excited about it. I don't tend to play video games very much,
mm-hmm.
But I suppose if I did, that might be fun.
Do you think the inspirational message would deter you from playing?
The inspirational method. No, not necessarily.
Okay. So based on that, do you think the game sounds cool?
Yeah.
Yes, because most of the Wii games coming out now aren't really involving movement.
Yeah,
like,
they don't involve like
Smash Bros. Brawl and
So I think it's the whole idea of the using the Wii remote to do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the games just more of a punch.
It's more like punch,
yeah,
like
so
pressing
I think
buttons.
That'd be
the more movement stuff they could do, the better.
Yeah.
Yes.
And could you imagine it being used as a teaching tool in Sunday or public schools?
Dude, they use the Passion of the Christ. I mean, that was not good of a movie, but it got a lot of people back in the church. You know?
Right.
That's true.
So do you think that the inspirational message would deter you from playing, or is it like sound fun enough whether or not you know about Moses?
Well, I would say it's not really. If I was going to buy that, I'd probably. Well, I don't think the inspirational thing would really make me not want to buy it.
Okay. Do you think that maybe your grandmother might buy it for you for Christmas?
Probably.
System would it be on?
For Wii.
Oh, I don't have a Wii.
I have a Wii.
Okay.
I don't think my grandma would buy it.
I'm not sure my grandma will buy it, but my, my uncle is, he believes in the Old Testament, so.
Okay. How about this? This game's fun. This is a lot less serious. It's called Wall Kart, and it's sold only in Walmart stores. And the whole thing is it's like racing on carts, except it's not normal go-karts. It's like really overweight people on little power carts, and they're driving around on the tracks through the store.
Like they're really slow?
Itself, yeah.
Well, they're pretty fast carts, but the people are really big.
In the game, they're pretty fast. And what they're trying to do is pick up items. So it's like everyone has their own course, because you can choose, like, if you want to get, you know, the adult diapers first, or if you want to go and get the cereal. So you get to choose that. And then there's this one part, and each person has to pick one hard-to-get item. And that's where they have to stand up in the cart to get it off the top shelf. So with the DS, they take the stylus and swing it back and forth a whole bunch on the screen in order to reach up and get that top item.
So basically it's about these fat guys on carts who try to get stuff inside of Walmart, kind of?
Yeah, and they're racing to do it. Any history?
Sometimes.
This is a good one, actually.
This is a fun game.
Uh-huh.
It's called Founding Fighters, The Battle for the Constitution.
Okay.
And so it's like an arcade fighting game, like Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat.
Uh-huh.
But featuring the delegates to the 1787 Constitution Convention.
Uh-huh. So you fight like Tekken and shit like
it's
that?
It's like a Tekken game, yeah.
Like Ben Franklin versus Thomas Jefferson.
Exactly.
Or that's
It's supposed to be like an education game, like on the terms of what kids like today. You know, like
states' rights.
Yeah, it's like the Federalists versus the Anti-Federalists. They're in Philadelphia for the Constitutional Convention.
I'm putting you to sleep talking to you right now.
even if you knew that it has moves such as Alexander Hamilton's Knickerbocker Shocker and the Philadelphia Filibuster.
Free game online, maybe.
Okay.
Founding Fighters, it turns out, is real. After the fact, we found out that Wide Load Games has trademarked this very name for a forthcoming game. It has no relation to ours, actually. This was just total coincidence. We didn't know until after we had taped this segment and after we had our meeting and figured out what these games were going to be.
But if anyone in Wide Load is listening, I implore you to please include the Knickerbocker Shocker or the Philadelphia Filibuster as a move in your game. We've obviously done some of the hard work it takes to create a game, and we don't mind if you want to take a little bit of that. We'll be flattered.
Would you prefer the title The Founding Fighters or The Fighting Fathers?
Founding Fighters, because okay. Founding Fathers. No, Fighting Fathers sounds like, you know, it'd be like...
Like your dad?
Yeah, like your dad at, like, your little hockey game or something.
Would you, if you had to give it a review score based on your current knowledge, what would you give it out, 1 to 10?
8.
One of the ideas they have is that players can sometimes, they do an attack that puts up a historical document on the right side of the screen if it's the other player, and they have to scroll through it and read it to get it off the screen, and meanwhile the player who did it to him gets to attack him and do combos on him. You think that sounds cool, or is that...
Yeah. Maybe. I don't really get the part that... Wait, so, like...
I think that would
it's
be
like
cool.
It's like a punishment. Like, if you're, like...
You, like,
you know,
shove something in their
winning.
Face. Read it, read
yeah.
it, bam!
Yeah. Yeah, and then they're, like, distracted. They can't even, you know, beat you up because they're learning history.
How do you make sure that they read it?
Do you, like... Because, well, they have to scroll
They have to
down,
scroll, so
it
technically...
Slow.
Well, another thing is often in... A lot of those games, it seems like people speak and say things. So if you could incorporate sort of the general philosophies of the founding delegates into their dialogue, like their just general dialogue, and it was out loud and auditory as opposed to just visual, because a lot of students don't absorb information as well if they read it themselves than if they hear it.
Mm-hmm. So,
that
like,
could be an
special
idea.
Moves that are involved with, like, their different sides. Like,
right.
Alexander Hamilton, you know, like, hits people with the Federalist Papers or something.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or, like, John, what's his name?
Adams?
Not John Adams, actually. That's, who is the, with the big signature?
Hancock.
I can't believe people really are like making it.
They want to sell it to public
might.
Schools. They want to get like
no
people in schools
way.
To play it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it going to be like an e-game? game where it's like a little bit more cartoony, or is it going
to
be a...
That's what we want to ask you, what you would prefer, because they're
like, should it be like brutally realistic?
Realistic. I think it should be like T. Don't make it M. Because they
have one movie, like Benjamin Franklin's flying a kite, right? And then he brings the kite down, and it gets hit by lightning, and it electrocutes, you know, it wraps around the neck of the other player, and then it electrocutes him. And then it cuts their head right off with the kite string. So it's pretty...
That should be M.
Give George Washington an axe.
Prefer to the game be violent like Mortal Kombat or toned down more like Smash Brothers?
Smash Brothers is like, if it's gonna be toned down like Smash Brothers, it's gotta be like, I'd have it as a 4-player game.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, have it like interactive environment, stuff like that, stuff moves, like have it on the boat for the Boston Tea Party, something like that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's a cool idea.
If you were to play, would you choose the anti-federalist or the federalist side? They're looking who to make the bad guys in the box, because they don't want it to just seem like it's a bunch of friends.
I would probably try both.
Okay.
Just for fun.
If you were to pick right now, would you choose to play on the federalist side or the anti-federalist side?
Anti-federalist.
Okay. I don't know. I'm okay going with what he said.
All right.
Like being a
psycho. Anything in particular about the anti-federalists that is appealing?
No.
Just anti, like,
yeah.
Fight the man. All right.
So what are your impressions of this one?
I'm worried perhaps about the historical accuracy of the delegates fighting it out Street Fighter style. I imagine that it might get quite a few kids interested in the development of the Constitution that wouldn't otherwise perhaps be so excited.
This game, the other thing to know about it is that each of these characters has got, it's not all learning, they have moves like Alexander Hamilton has got he's got the Knickerbocker Shocker. So based on this.
We're losing it. It's so dumb.
So, what are your general impressions of the game based on the description?
It sounds pretty, like, stupid and funny or something like that.
Merchants of Cool were Sean Elliott and Robert Ashley, with Mission Critical bullet points by Anthony Gallegos. This Summer 2000 Market Test sizzle clip was edited by Robert Ashley for the exclusive use of our clients, with music by I Come to Shanghai.
As GFW Radio's usual host, Jeff Green, would say, hello and welcome. This isn't the new face of GFW Radio. Jeff has gone on vacation for another 3 weeks, and we decided to do things a little differently for that time, rather than just have two or three of us meet in a room and carry on as though our great and beloved father, Jeff, was not with us. So, Sean Malloy has left us. We still can't announce where he's gone, which leaves us in Robert's bedroom out here in Berkeley. So, obviously, we have Robert Ashley with us and Anthony Gallegos.
Hello.
So, the first thing you need to know about this is that as we stood for hours and hours out front of this GameStop, this is a downtown Berkeley GameStop, and if we were wondering, you know, if an employee was going to come out and ask us what we were doing or ask us to leave, even worse.
Right.
But then when first a homeless guy comes up with a shopping cart full of recyclable cans and bottles, and he parks that right in front of the door and goes in, and then proceeds to play on the Wii kiosk for about half an hour, we knew it was probably cool. And then when 10 minutes after he goes in, a homeless woman comes in with a hand cart, and it's just loaded, as you know, as they typically are when you're homeless, and you have only so much space to carry
your bottles
around
and cans with you. You know?
And she brings her cart inside, but instead of playing, which is totally cool, I was like, hey, what else are you doing? You know, but she just starts patrolling the aisles, like going around the aisle. And, you know, you've been in a GameStop. We're not talking about, like, you know, Big Lots or something. She's going around through these tiny ass aisles with her cart, doing God knows what. So at that point, I think we were pretty comfortable doing whatever we wanted.
Yeah, and we never really were approached by the man at EB Games, but we did catch a lot of people coming out, most of which did not really want to talk to us. Especially the adults, people were too busy, but we got a lot of kids.
This is downtown Berkeley, because I mean, when you get out of your car, you get off of the BART or something, first thing you do, you look straight ahead and you put blinders on, because someone's going to be asking you for something every 2 minutes, and or just like bugging you, or something is going to be going on that you don't want to see. Hell, the last two times, you know, Anthony and I went down there to eat, well, we saw someone getting arrested on one corner.
And a million people asking for cigarettes.
And
dude,
whatever.
That happened the whole time we were there. Like, every time Sean lit a cigarette in downtown Berkeley, someone asked him for one. And
dude,
I didn't
realize
that there was this. what
GFW the fuck, does not endorse smoking.
Wait, this is off limits. You talk about your bathroom excrement. You talk about, like, what burritos are, like, burning your bowels every day, but you can't talk
I
about
I said
bathroom.
No.
Okay.
All right, well.
Anyway, Sean was drinking a lot of Cokes, and people kept on coming by saying, hey, can I have a sip of that Coke? And Sean's like, sure. And I was like, wow, I didn't know, you know, you were giving out sips of Coke like that all the time.
Hate you. But yeah, I mean, that was the deal. We went to another location for one take down the street, which is funny because, well, you know, two miles away or something. And the change was dramatic. We go from having to accost people, say, hey, do you have a minute? You know, regretting that we didn't have a bag of free stuff to hand out to entice them to talk to us for like 5 minutes people would walk by us and they were like begging us to approach them, you know, like outside of this other store, they would basically come up to us and stare at us, wait for us to say something.
Yeah. Well, it's just the difference in being in the burbs. Like,
Maybe they thought you were going to give them free shit though,
right,
as a result of it.
That's what we should have just said, you know, sign up and we might
you're,
you know, give you
a
free
list.
Game. We could have just like
signed up for your 18th. Well, we're already
some,
lying
terrible
to them. We could tell, game. Or we could just say give us your address and we'll send you 15 free games.
They would have been much more cooperative.
An alarm clock, but I don't know, solar powered alarm clock would work out.
Yeah.
The biggest thing was being able to do it without cracking up the whole time. We got, like, we did the first take without laughing. I mean, the first people that we approached, I mean, it helped that they were young. We had to work our way up to adults, but it was easy enough to do because, I mean, I don't know. Before we went and did it, I was thinking it was like going to get a shot or something when you're a kid. You didn't want to do it. And once we did that one, I was like, oh, we need to go get a lollipop or something. You know, like, we totally did it. But
yeah, I felt pretty proud. I thought I would be the problem because Sean, I don't know, you do like crank calls and stuff, but I've never been the kind of person to be able to hold a straight face while I was like, you know, doing it.
No
doing
one something. Reacted poorly to you guys holding a mic in their face.
No, that was the weird thing. It was one of those, I think Sean mentioned this, that, you know, like we had a clipboard with these like marketing survey sheets that we made. And then I had the microphone, and I think actually the microphone gave us some sort of authority, like the clipboard.
It's like
did,
the
like
lab coats in the Milgram authority experiment, you know, it's like, because no one asked us. We actually had, you know, of course we have just this huge number of different excuses and alibis for everything.
Right.
Like why do you have a microphone? It was going to be that, you know, our client, we like to put together these things we call sizzle clips. And so our client can actually hear your level of excitement with their own ears. Or your level of,
that's,
you know,
totally believable.
So you get the sizzle on the street. You know, what's the sizzle on the street for my products?
This sizzle clip.
We should put together a sizzle clip.
People just getting hyped about it. Like that one guy was hyped for Tenderondo. The other thing was I expected more people to be like the couple, the older couple, and just trashing it all, you know, not to even feign interest in it. And so maybe we'll do it in another take. So we're going to, you know, we're taping some more tomorrow.
Yeah.
Where we set it up and tell people that normally we represent big corporations like Electronic Arts and Activision, you know, Ubisoft. And this time we got these, it's this startup from these brothers, and they made this company called Entertech. They just lost a fortune in real estate, but they had enough left over to invest in one last thing. And they decided that it was going to be games all the way. Games, games, games. And then once they're all set up.
Because once they made their fortune in real estate, you know, they were moving it over to the next hot thing, you know? They just know where the money's at. So
yeah, it was, I mean, Anthony, of course, helped. We had like this, I was about to call it a brainstorming session, but considering what came out of it, I don't think it was really a brainstorming session.
I wasn't there when you guys did that.
We were at the brewery, but I mean,
we just came up with ideas by rehearsing it to each other and trying not to laugh and bouncing ideas off each other like we were actually being serious.
Yeah. Were there any games that you guys talked about before I got there that didn't make the...
No, I think we developed them all.
Yeah.
I do want to throw in, I mean, if we, for the session, that this is going to be confusing chronologically now, I'll be talking about tomorrow because it'll, when you hear this, it'll be in there if we do it. But the whole thing with Wall Cart and the idea of this game that's like kart racing, but you're like on an obese person on a personal mover, like the hover round or something, and the course goes through the aisles of a Walmart, but instead of like a normal course, and everyone takes the same route, you know, you have five items you got to pick, and then you plot your own route through there. But then there's like this like really strategic moment. It's kind of like a pit stop where you need to get something on the top shelf, and to do it, you got like, it's a DS game, so you got to just like spastically move your stylus back and forth over the screen in order to like reach up and grab this thing. And then if you're not quick,
the hardest thing for this person to do in his life is to reach from his hover round to the top shelf of a Walmart. So product aisle.
If Snake has to, if you have to mash a button to get Snake to crawl through a microwave oven, you gotta like spaz on your stylus to get this person to grab some pig's feet off the top shelf.
Well, they never put pig's feet on the top shelf.
Yeah, they do. I used to work in a grocery store, man.
Really?
For years. Yeah. Pigs, I mean, the whole thing when you work there is like finding the grossest stuff, and then when you're closing, daring one another, or all of us, we'd put money in a pool, say we're each going to put in $5, and we gather three items each night, and whoever can consume like a specified amount of each will get the whole pot. And it'd always be like the juice from a bottle of pig's feet, like you'd have to drink it dry, and then a can of juice from concentrate, you know, like Welch's or something, just pure concentrate. And then also there's stuff called FUD. It's a Latino product that's made from, it's like head cheese. It's like chopped up bits of cow everything. And pig head. And it comes in a Spam-like brick.
My friend told me the grossest part about working at a grocery store was like being set on like the fine spoiled goods detail. So you just have to walk around the store and find like the person that shoved butter behind like the box of cereal a long time ago.
Yeah, there's always like random crap like that. There's like people poke fingers. I mean, like in the packages of tripe and stuff. You remember that? Or like, yeah, the same thing. They'll put fish. They'll decide they don't want fish when they're on the chip aisle, and they'll stick it back behind some Doritos or something. And then the other thing is that people are thieves. You find out thieves aren't just like the little hood rats that you'd expect. That they're like people of, you know, people of all ages. And one of them would be women wanting vaginal yeast infection ointments. And they didn't want to pay, you know, they're expensive. They're like $30 or $40.
And probably embarrassing.
So that was guaranteed. You'd always find like on the magazine aisle back behind the magazines, like empty boxes of whatever, oint.
That's fucking disgusting. Sean's giving me the eye.
What up?
Dude, the thing with these microphones is that they're so intimate. Like, I'm listening on headphones right now. We've got this really unusual setup in like my bedroom right now.
We're just like talking into mics instead of our normal headsets.
Yeah, and so it's a little awkward, but the funny thing is everyone sounds like NPR, like you're, hello. Welcome
well, I'm
to
like,
the
way I'm leaning forward to, I really do feel like I should be in the studio singing my rad hits.
Sing Tenderondo.
Tenderondo.
Why don't you come to your senses? Come down from your fences and look me in the eye. Tenderando.
I have nothing to say to that. Except I appreciate it.
You appreciate
it. I feel like you guys are serenading me with that. Yeah. So what other random stuff do we get to talk about?
Well, we were playing, you played too. You played a...
I played a bit of Political Machine.
Political Machine 08.
The review just went up. It'll be up by the time you guys all hear this.
Shit's up.
Yeah. Rory Magnon did an excellent job.
Yeah.
Okay. I think sitting in your bedroom, it's going to be impossible not to digress and digress and digress and digress. But we're playing Political Machine. I've only played one match. Anthony?
One.
I played two. I played one on the beginner difficulty with Obama versus McCain, and then I played McCain versus Obama. I played as McCain on normal, and I won as Obama, and I lost as McCain. I lost pretty bad as McCain, actually.
My first game I played is Ron Paul, the honorable gynecologist Ron Paul, and I lost by a landslide, an 84-style landslide, to Barack.
Oh, wow.
To Obam. Yeah.
So I think it's pretty realistic. In that,
I just went everywhere and talked about like improving the economy. That's all I ever gave speeches about. Improve the economy, now give me money.
Who did you play as?
Barack Obama. Yeah, I did Barack Obama versus Ulysses S. Grant.
Well, that's a little unlockable. That's a little stacked. Yeah, but basically, if you haven't seen anything about the game, it's a strategy game. You know, it's all about capturing the most electoral college votes in all 50 states. And there are all these sort of metrics that you follow as you go. You know, you're building campaign headquarters and raising money so that you can place ads and which you can place, you know, like newspaper, radio, and television ads. And you sort of build other headquarters that give you the ability to get endorsements and...
Or the ability to hire, like, political consultants.
Yeah, which are kind of...
It seems extraordinarily complicated when you start it because there's so many different options. There's so many types of endorsements to win. There's so many types of special interests that you can hire, like fixers, intimidators. So, for example, if your opponent's got a celebrity endorsement in California, you can hire a fixer, take it, and it'll kick that. They'll basically off them. Something, you know, smear campaigns. You can pick up kooks, which is funny. It's the idea of just like the supporter that you don't want, which is pretty much like, all of Ron Paul supporters. I was about to say, I take that back. I just mean in the video game, guys. Yeah, I just mean the video game.
There are like these moments on the map where these like question marks pop up, and you can just fly there and you get a free operative. Which is kind of like a special power. These are the people we're talking about. And sometimes, if you're not careful, you can pick up some jackass who like lowers your issue ratings in the state.
Right.
Yeah.
And that like that bonus thing. What happens? There's a question mark on a state, and it's another inducement to like travel the country thoroughly. Just constantly going back and forth instead of just going between California, Florida, you know, Ohio, and like other important states. But the it seems super complicated. There, you know, you have equivalent of, you know, meters like you would in a strategy game or something. But in this case, it's like PR clout, and you spend that. You have, of course, your money. You're spending that every time you're buying advertisements. You could buy advertisements for print or television. Television, of course, in this case is the best because you're able to hit surrounding states with the ad placed in a single state with that. But while it was kind of intimidating to me because there's so many things to learn the first game, I stupidly didn't try the tutorial. I was like, I'm just going to like go raw dog in this and become president.
Yeah.
But Rory insists that as you continue to play it, you rapidly figure it out. And he's complaining that there's not enough flexibility, you know? So this is always awkward to like, speak for someone else. In this case, he should have a mic. He actually should have been, it's a long story, but he should have been a Brodio member a long time ago. But, it ultimately becomes about the parties. It's like you're basic, no matter what, if there's no difference in playing Ron Paul really at the end of the day than playing as McCain or, Obama and Clinton.
I think part of that is because it's based on real polling data, and they don't really have polling data for how John Kerry would do in the 2008
race. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, so they don't really have like real polling data for how Ron Paul would do in a national race.
Right.
And so it's really like, I think they have polling data mainly for the parties. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He also suggests that it's easy to sort of game the system with these all powerful, like there are certain topics, like if you're going to give a speech, rather than just mess around and give one that is like going to, you know, satisfy people that are registered, you know, Democrats or Republicans, you just hit these like all purpose topics. Like I oppose high gas prices or something.
Yeah.
Right. Or like I support
improve the economy.
Yeah. Improve the economy. And it's like, you just go from state to state saying, you know, I don't like high gas prices. I don't like high gas prices. And he says, if you do it the right way, you could win every time that way. And that's interesting because it's like, ultimately, however you play, and whatever the successful strategies turn out to be, I think they're going to like, those are going to be the game's commentary, deliberate or not.
Yeah.
The game is going to then comment on the election process, you know.
Well, already, like, I found that, I mean, like you were saying, each state, you know, you can take out ads or give speeches or whatever, and you're given these lists of things that you either I support or I oppose. The war on terror, withdrawing from the war in Iraq, improving the economy, you know, high gas prices. You comment on these things in speeches or in ads or on television appearances. You do these like, you know, TV things where they ask you questions and you answer. But the thing is, like, you go to each state and you look at the data and it just shows you. You just go with like whichever has the highest number for your candidate. You know, it gives you, it's real obvious like what you should be talking about in each state. And I think the commentary is, you know, in the fact that you're in playing this game, you're not actually playing like as a candidate that you would like to see run who is really believing what they're saying. You're playing as a candidate has to run in this country or the way the candidates do run in this country.
Right.
Which is just to use polling data to try to say what people want to hear.
Yeah, cynicism and opportunism like, yeah. throughout the whole game. And that's what I was getting at by like the message, whatever the game's implicit message is. It's just that. Yeah.
Yeah. And like the other weird thing though is, and I guess this must have something to do with the fact that they used polling data to create these state, you know, values. But man, it's really, the deck is really stacked against McCain, I feel like. Everywhere, when you play against McCain, at least in, you know, in the one match that I played with McCain, having played as Obama, like, if you play McCain against Obama, like, his issues that are positive with voters aren't nearly as positive. So like in Ohio, Obama, you know, gets, you know, 90 points on McCain for saying that he would like to withdraw from Iraq, whereas McCain only gets like 40 points for saying he wants tax cuts.
Right.
You know, which might reflect reality, but as a strategy game, I feel like it's much harder for McCain to win, which only really makes me happy if that's like reflecting reality, but it is a more challenging game if you try to play, I think, with candidates that have tougher issues. But the other interesting thing about it that I thought, and I don't know if you experienced this, but like I did think it was kind of complicated at first. But in playing with Obama, like to begin with, like I literally just said I'm going to try to do like the real strategy and just milked the funds out of New York and California, like fundraising in New York and California, building the biggest headquarters there as soon as I could, so that I could right. bring in as much money as I could, and then flying to Ohio and Florida and you know the swing states, and just desperately, you know, taking out television ads and putting all my operatives in there and mm-hmm. making sure that I was winning the states. And
your running mate's a significant choice as well.
I couldn't figure out though, like how the running mate,
you get a huge bonus based on, so say for in my case, I ran as Ron Paul with George W. Bush as my for vice president, and that guaranteed me Texas.
Yeah,
he was able to just like sit in Texas and just, I mean, that was it. It was the end of the story, you know, for at least for that state. So yeah, I guess depending, you know, whatever, I don't know the exact yeah. extent of the variables that they determine. I mean,
you can also
fundraising, added clout, but I mean, presence on certain issues or what?
Yeah. I mean, you can also definitely use them to like, they boost your awareness. Like awareness is sort of the baseline of the game. Like you're going around basically letting people know who you are at first before you can even get them to vote for you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you can, whenever you go to a state, it boosts your awareness. But when you have a VP, you can send them into states that...
We learned the power of awareness when some of the people in that first section said that they liked, that they were willing to pay the full retail price for duty calls. And on a scale of, you know, 1 to 20, how enthusiastically they were willing, like an 18. I mean, yeah. that we pretty much just had to say this game exists.
Like, oh, yeah,
that's all, that's all it took.
I will pay $70 for it, for duty calls. As long as the main character has a helmet with a mysterious visor.
Oh, I thought it was hair as tall as Guile, but wait, not quite as tall as Guile, but a flat top.
It was like tricky, man. You should have just asked for like a character creation.
That should be something Duty Calls has. The first ever game with character creation in the first person shooter, even though you'll never get to see his face.
Has that really never been done? I think that's probably been done.
That's his point. The whole point of Duty Calls was to offer people these revolutionary new features that have existed since the fucking advent of, you know, of online video games.
Yeah.
Well, so back to the political machine.
Yeah, just one thing we haven't mentioned is it's made by Stardock, same people who made Sins of a Solar Empire.
Which they have, like, one of the characters in there, right? What's his name? Like, so they have
they have an alien. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
My concern with the game is I didn't really have that much fun on the first pass, and that might not mean anything. It could be, you know, like, you continue to play it, and then you really start to appreciate it. Mm-hmm. But in my case, I mean, this is a challenge for all strategy games. It's, like, getting over that hump.
Yeah.
You know, but I just was, like... I don't know. I didn't enjoy it that much. I appreciate it more for existing. Kind of, it's like I like to see. I mean, just that we talk about, you know, seeing daring and different types of games, and not just, you know, another this or that. And then here we have one that's absolutely unique, and yet I just wasn't immediately turned on to it. You know, which is normal. I mean, not everything's going to work, but
yeah, I thought it was pretty fun. I mean, I couldn't see playing it for like months and months, but I imagine I'll probably play it for like, you know, 6 or 7 more times just to see like. You know, if I can beat the higher levels and stuff. I mean, there's some wild cards in it in that I don't think I've seen all the operatives who are, you know, those people with special powers. Because last time I played, I got this guy who's like Bono, like a rock star.
Right. There's a lot of, because there's like Barry King.
Yeah.
Obvious,
the TV stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And those are weird though. I had trouble when I was playing with McCain for some reason, I immediately gravitated towards trying to grab the independent voters, so I would be answering kind of moderate on the questions, but I think they expected the answers to be, like, straight conservative, so I'd get, like, boos from the crowd. Like, I don't know if you...
You should run as Robert Ashley next time you play.
Maybe.
You can create your own character.
So. Can I create my own party?
That's a good question.
No.
Party Brodeo. Vote Brodeo.
You can be independent. You can be a Republican. You can be a Democrat.
Cool. That's all there is.
This One Up podcast is brought to you by Hail to the Chimp from Gamecock Media. Hail to the Chimp is a fast-paced party game about 10 animals fighting to become the next ruler of the animal kingdom. Packed with bare-knuckle brawling, lush interactive environments, and a talking woodchuck, it's the best selection you'll see this year. Available June 24th on PS3 and Xbox 360.
Thinking about this idea, you know, recently we've had all these games come out that really celebrate choice and the player's ability, you know, freedom to play it in a distinctly, you know, in a unique way. An example would be Metal Gear Solid 4. Obviously, you can play stealthily. You can, you know, go open combat with it. All the way back to Oblivion. Bioshock's another clear example for people that want to hack machines, people that want to use one set of powers, people that just want to use their guns primarily. GTA came out recently, another game like that. And I just noticed that, like, among some of the most vocal proponents of these kind of games, it's like if they sense that someone's criticizing the game, then they immediately turn and suggest that they were playing it wrong. And so all of a sudden this freedom that was the cause for, you know, celebration and for the game then becomes the cudgel that they beat you with. Oh, you must have played this game as a shooter. That's why. Or you must have just used this or overused that.
Or you played it on easy or you played it.
That's the next layer. You know. And it goes, yeah, I mean, I was thinking how it applies to exactly. I mean, Halo's the one I most associate it with because of the, you know, the legendary and heroic modes that everyone talks about. Well, what difficulty did you play it on? Well, it's like, or shut up, guide. Dude. Like, you're, you know, instantly irrelevant, whatever you have to say, if you didn't, you know, master it on the hardest mode. It happened again with Call of Duty 4, and that came up. And so you see that version. And then on Steven Totila's MTV Multiplayer blog recently, he posted just some initial impressions of MGS4, and in the course of it, they were really positive too. In the course of it, he said that he was playing on a standard definition television,
And immediately a lot of people came on there just going crazy, you know, saying all credibility lost, you know, you're a total idiot. What a tool. And this one guy's just like bragging about all kinds of nonsense, you know, about his aspect ratios and his monster gold cables and stuff, and saying like, this is why, you know, you'll never be able to talk about this game.
You can't talk about this game if you play it like 80% of people, you know, who buy Metal Gear Solid 4 are going to play it.
Right.
Know, like everyone has an HD TV.
Exactly, dude. Yeah. So yeah, just thinking about, you know, putting together different thoughts on just this whole phenomenon. I mean, clearly we're talking about the most, it's not everyone. We're talking about a subset of just diehard fans of certain games and franchises. But that notion of trying to delegitimize another person's experience is interesting to me, because games are so fundamentally about your own experience on it. You know, you gave me your example of when you were playing Metal Gear Solid 4, the Crying Wolf.
Yeah.
And it sounded like it was a total, you know, wash for you. It was almost like a bug or something.
Yeah.
And how, you know, I joked to you when you told me that this is first thing people are going to be is like, you played it wrong. If you were to put that out there as though it were some, because they would assume you're putting it out there as a reason not to buy the game.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that it was particularly not enjoyable to me. Actually, like in that game, like getting through a boss battle really quick, I felt kind of like relieved.
Really?
But basically in fighting Crying Wolf, you know, the whole thing is that you're supposed to catch her, when she's out of, when she's out of her like little suit, you know, what is she? She's like a wolf robot. She opens up the hood and takes out her sniper rifle and she's looking for you. Well, the level is really huge that you're fighting her in. There's guys all in it. There's these two buildings. And I thought that I was supposed to just, I didn't think that it was like my time to fight her yet. Like I was running and looking for the exit to where I would get, you know, to where I was going to be fighting her for real. And so I found this back area towards the, you know, the back end of the level. And then that was closed, so I started making my way around this little like canyon, rocky canyon. There's no one over there, you know, no soldiers or anything running after me. And I put on my night scope and see Crying Wolf or whatever in the trees, and I zoom in on it, and I could tell that she's got the hood up, and just pop her like six times without her closing the thing, and killed her in the first try. I mean, I think that they weren't expecting like serious snipage, but
yeah. So there's two contexts for this. One is that if people like will listen to you, if you listen, or if they were to read it, if you were to, you know, comment on a message board, the assumption is that the commentary should be read in the sense of a review, like, oh, this is me saying this is how things are, and maybe that's their reaction, or it's just the casual conversation. It's like when you told me, it's like, you know, it's no skin off my back. I had a much, much better time in that battle, but the interesting thing for me is how different it is, and it's like that you can't. In my mind, you really can't delegitimize your version, because that's it. You that's your experience of it. That's exactly how it happened. And you can go and do it again. But I mean, that first experience is just, that's just how it happened. And now if you take and multiply this, granted that I suspect in this case it's a bug, but even aside from bugs, when there's just differences, when people try different things, another example I have is the guy Pegorino in GTA 4. And you're basically supposed to assassinate him, but we knew you're supposed to go and chase him, and he's waiting in a boat on a dock. But if you're clever and you're looking at your map, you see where he's at. You're like, oh, he's right there. And then you pull out your sniper rifle and you can see his head bobbing up, and you try to shoot him, and just the blood will splatter, but nothing happens. And then you're like, oh, well, let me hit him with a rocket and blow this fucking boat to bits. And then, of course, that doesn't do anything either, because the game is really wanting you to go up there and trigger this extended scene involving a helicopter and all sorts of other stuff. And it's like, not to criticize the game for that, but if that person who chose that path is going to have a radically different experience than someone who just very naturally was inclined to run right up to that boat and very seamlessly move into that scene, into the sequence that the developers intended. But I think when you like multiply these kind of things on the scale across an entire experience of playing a game from beginning to end, it's just like more, I mean, it just reinforces like how subjective it's really going to be. I mean, everyone is going to, and I think that's reason to celebrate games. I mean, that's what makes them interesting to me, but I think a lot of people find it frustrating.
Yeah, especially because there's this like weird reaction that everyone should really line up. All the sort of enthusiasts, all the fans should really line up, and you know, sing the same praises of a game, even though everyone's sort of playing it differently. And maybe you're having a good time, but you're probably playing it different than the next guy.
Right.
Yeah. You know? Unless it's something just ridiculously linear. I mean, games just tend not to be that way anymore. You know, it's not like you're playing like a side-scrolling shooter or something where you're dodging the same bullets, you're having the exact same game experience.
You know? I've had that growing up, like when we used to play Metal Gear Solid 2 and stuff like that, and I would get caught, and instead of like reloading from the last save, I'd just like kill all the guys and hide. My friends would be like, "That's not how you're supposed to play." Like, they would rather just get killed or reload, so that at the end they would only have been like discovered like once. Like being discovered was like their way of playing the game. Like even that was a failure for them. Whereas me, I was like, if I get discovered and I get out of it, that was like good enough.
Yeah, so. It's. I don't know. I think it's interesting to hear about different ways that people play it. And I think a lot of times too, I mean, you will, even on forums and stuff among, you know, the diehard, you will see some of that. People are kind of like trading stories and stuff, and it's all fun and games until someone seems slightly negative. And then you bring out the knives and you say you did it wrong. I think it's really, I mean, part of it's just an easy way, rhetorical way to win an argument. Right. I mean, well, you're wrong. I'm right. I mean, that's the end of it. You're not inviting any more discussion. That's it. You know.
Although it's one of those things that only works like in the context of a message board. You could never like make that argument in person, because once you say you played it wrong, like your argument is going to be like defeated in just 10 seconds of rational conversation.
Yeah, message boards are interesting to me for that way. I mean, just like in the sociological point of view, the way that people argue is like you can throw something out there and just escape into anonymity, or also just the fact that there's. Even if you're known in the community, but just the pure volume of different responses and stuff, and it's like, is someone really going to look at mine closely and think it over, or are they just going to bounce to the next one and get this general sense that I'm dissatisfied with them or I don't like what they did? But then when you really look at it, and you're like, there's not like a shred of like rationality to this at all, you know? And then,
not to mention, I just don't think that you can really. No one reads anything that's over like 50 words anyway. So you get like a sniping moment unless you're lucky enough for people to actually like recognize you because you post there a lot. Like I know lots of people and in the message boards that I read that I'll sit and read. But if it's just some dude that I've never read before, I'm not going to stop and read some crazy long diary entry.
Right, so all, you're like stuck a with thousand like, word
someone's
post.
Like pithy response or like a meme or a.
Visual responses are our choice.
But even like, Sean puts up like a really long blog that has like thought out things, and you just see people that are like, I don't know these words that you use. You can tell they read like the first paragraph and are like, you're just stupid. Like, I mean, it doesn't even matter. I think if there's name recognition sometimes, as soon as they see something that one word in the post that they don't like, they just move on.
And the danger on our side of getting and then caught up in it,
Bold it. You got to bold for effect. When you catch someone,
here's the synopsis at the end. I always think about doing that. I'm like, I anticipate exactly where there's going to be misunderstanding. So maybe it's my fault as a communicator, but I'm like, do I really want to put like the bullet point thing at the end of this? Yes, I really do like this game. The reason I'm talking about this is because, it's like,
we should create like a new message board program that uses PowerPoint, like the actual Microsoft PowerPoint. You could just load up slides.
We could make that. Well, there already is the game about, forum wars, but we can make the game instead where it's like a mix of forum wars and the political machine 2008, where you're actually trying to keep everyone happy on the internet, which is probably like trying to,
2008.
Satisfy all the voters in the country.
That would be the most complicated game ever. Like, can you imagine all
it
the
It wouldn't
factions?
Be very fun either, dude.
You know what we should talk about? We should talk about a little commercial that you showed me earlier.
Oh. WETPETS Webpes San Pablo. One stop, one shop. We got it all. Anything you can get and take home. Something with rabbits and dogs, hamsters, parakeets, and scorpions. So we need to play a sample of that. This is years and years, this would come on. And if Melissa would be in the other room or I'd be in the room and it would come on, it would be like scream like to get the other to come out because we spent all this time trying to memorize it. And of course, we weren't taping it or anything. And I could never find it online. I was like, there's no way someone that lives in this region hasn't put this on YouTube yet. It belongs on YouTube. And I finally found it like a couple years after we've been watching it. And you guys just got to see it.
WETPETS, WETPETS, Wet Pet San Pablo. Only one place where fish and lizards hang out with cats and chinchillas. Kick back with hamsters and dogs, parakeets, rabbits, and scorpions. One stop, one shop, we got it all. Any pet you can get and take home. Best pet products and best pet food. Best pet service is Wet Pets for you. WETPETS, WETPETS, Wet Pet San Pablo.
I don't understand the premise behind a store named Wet Pets to begin with.
Because it's fish, dude. It's although, like, why do they have scorpions?
Yeah, he said scorpions. Because
it's like they well, branched out.
Said scorpion.
Yeah. And it still doesn't rhyme with dog. With dog. No matter how much you torture it, it still doesn't rhyme with dog.
Scorpiog.
Scorpiog. Hang out with snake and chinchilla.
Have you ever been to Wet Pets? Have you ever been in the
seen it. I have no idea where it's at other than San Pablo.
So why did you guys like just suddenly decide? I mean, what was the moment that you saw that commercial that you thought it was like a commercial that you guys just really needed to like memorize the song from?
It's undeniably dope on the first viewing. Like if that came on your TV, you just saw it now and you want to talk about it.
That's true.
If that was on the TV, you and Sarah would have made it your mission to memorize the thing. I mean, really we wanted to just record it, but I didn't have any means to do so, And so we recorded it in our minds. That should stay with me forever.
It's true. You're singing it all the way over here.
You got any commercials like that? Even from your youth?
Tap Plastics. That's always the one I remember.
Tap Plastics? What's that?
Tap Plastics. The fantastic plastic place. I don't know.
What do you buy at Tap Plastics?
I don't know. It's containers.
Like industrial.
I guess it's like a container store.
Why didn't they do something with that? Would you tap? Like that. That would be a hot ad. Okay. Nice. This is we're flagging. So I got something for you before you do that. Okay. So I want to tell you guys some more stories from my childhood.
Okay.
I think this is a good time to talk about these. This is like bonus material. Well, in San Diego, it would often be hot after school. So we had this whole thing where we'd come home, and in one of the houses we rented, it was the backyard had a small chain link fence that was connected to an elementary school. And there was a boys and girls club where kids would hang out there after school. So when we'd leave junior high, and traditionally leaving junior high would involve like going to the ice cream truck that was like parked outside and getting half of us on one side and half of us on the other and doing the like heave ho, rock the thing like back and forth. And so the guy would stick his head out the thing and yell at us because like the chips were falling off the pegs and stuff. So we'd walk after that. We'd just continue to go down the street. If kids were riding by on bikes, you'd throw like your bag, you know, your tote bag down in front of them. So like they'd hit it like a speed bump or something, you know, or conversely run if the high school kids were in the area or someone else that would be like looking to, you know, torment you. It's just the typical, you know, torment and be tormented. But then we'd get home and we found this perfect like middle ground where it was fun for everyone. And so we'd get this water balloon launcher and start shooting water balloons down into, it was called the bowl. It was basically just like, you know, a natural amphitheater where you would eat your lunch, but kids would play soccer and stuff from the boys club or whatever. They just do something there. So they're out there and then all of a sudden water balloons start raining down and that was their call. Like it's time to play. And then, so they'd come up to the back of the fence and start throwing rocks and shit at us. So we had hoses and we'd spray them with those. And then we'd fill, you know, grocery bags with water, which you can get quite a bit of water, right? I'm sure more than a gallon in a, you know, in a plastic grocery sack. And we'd get those
just
in
like
your hand.
It like a sling?
And yeah, like David and Goliath maneuver. Like, so they would come in our fence. They would jump the fence and come and do it. And like they loved it because like if we weren't there, if we were inside, you know, playing games or hanging out or something, you'd hear like rocks hitting the siding of the house, you know? And that was our sign to go out there. And then so we'd go chase them. And sometimes it was bad though. Like you'd hit them with one of those things and it would knock them down. Like, it would just knock them right off their feet. One of those big bags. So we did that forever. But then the water balloon launcher, we ended up having a whole lot of fun with that because we were able to take it. One of my friends, like, he had an apartment that was across the street from a McDonald's, and they had this enormous inflatable Ronald McDonald on the roof for a while. And the drive-through was facing the street, and the Ronald McDonald was up above that. So we were able to shoot that with water balloons, you know, trying to hit him in his Bosack, like above the people that are just driving through, getting their orders and stuff. And then like, the manager comes over across the street and he's like, "Why are you doing that?" I'm like, "Cause there's a giant Ronald McDonald on the roof, dude. And we want to hit him in the Bosack with water balloons. What do you mean? Why we're doing it?" And he's like, "Well, it's fine. I already called the police." And then the water balloon thing led to more trouble because outside of another friend's dad's house, you know, he had like, his parents were separated. He'd these brothers. I talked about these brothers.
Yes, you have.
And then skin farting on the their youngest brother, and how the one actually pulled his pants down, and farted across the dinner table after the dad had just set the table. But these guys, so they're at this house, and it was called the Be All Field. It was just like a ball field, and adults would play like softball and stuff there in the evenings. So then we just launched the water balloons, you know, up across the street and into their softball game the whole time.
Wait, can I ask, what is a water balloon launcher?
It's a three-person launcher, right?
You take like, yeah, it's a three-person thing where it's made of constructed like surgical tubing, and it has like a, basically, so three people, you know, one person each holds the end. You basically act as posts. You can also put them on metal posts if you want. And then you stretch back the surgical tubing as far as you can. And there's a pouch to put the water balloon in that it rests in. And this is just a giant slingshot.
Yeah.
You pull it back about 7 or 8 feet and let it go. And so we'd start doing that, you know, launching it onto the people playing at the Be-All Field. And then it's straight down the street. They're pretty fun to do horizontally. So like you'd time it, you'd have a spotter out on the sidewalk, and then you'd be down like the, down the lane they lived in. And he would tell you when the cars were coming, and then you try to hit the cars like directly from the side.
Why were you such a hellion when you were a kid?
That's the thing. Well, cause you know how there's this like mix. Some people react to it really negatively. It's like, I'll talk seriously about something, and then I'll just some ridiculous joke or seemingly inappropriate. It's like, that's just pretty much. And other people I've heard like think that it's affected or it's fake, that some part of it's fake, but that's just like how it's always been. I mean, my dad was a total raging alcoholic up to a certain point in my youth. We'd move schools every, you know, 8 months or something because we were evicted from an apartment or an area, and he would be like cut off from the various liquor stores for having too much of a tab. So we'd move. And like, that's the kind of thing where you have a couple of options to like meet new friends all the time, and one of them is to do fucked up shit and to make them laugh, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the quickest way to get in with a new group of kids when you're, you know. So that was just very normal, and it just seemed like, I mean, half the time there's no one watching you or something, you know, latchkey kid or something. And then at the same time, it's like I'd be serious in school and I'd want to learn too, but you just go back and forth between the two, so that seemed normal, but it was fun. It's just what you would do.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, everyone knows a kid like that. You know, Beavis or Butthead.
Yeah. But I eventually stopped. It was kind of funny. Like, so I was like one referral away from going to the reform school called Chaparral in the area. And that's like where, you know, gang members, drug addicts, like serious cases, like not people who just do stupid ass shit, like decide that you want to make a campaign for the student body elections for someone who isn't actually running, and put up posters everywhere of like, you know, vote for, like, the guy's nickname was Craw, vote for Craw, he talks no slaw, and like all this just random
random for Craw, he talks in slaw.
So for a bunch of stupid stuff like that, you know, and it, some of my teachers are like, dude, you'll go far if you cut the shit out, you know, like, yeah. why do you, you know, they would always do the same thing, why do you do this? Because I had one time, I remember it was like dart club in junior high.
Yeah.
And the principal, it was a British guy. And he, in his own time, he didn't have to stay after school. He just said, I'm going to get some kids into darts. Like, I really like darts. And we'd get in there, and there's this tradition. And he'd be like, let's play some darts. it doesn't sound very British, but it would come out like darts. And he, you know, he got us, like, I'm sure at a loss to himself, he would buy like nice dart sets and sell them to us for cheaper so we can afford them. And he'd always buy this enormous bag of popcorn. It was like a hefty trash bag full of popcorn. And I'd be having fun playing darts, and then all of a sudden I pick up the bag of popcorn and just like open the top and just throw the whole thing like up in the, and I don't know why I did it. And then he would ask me, he's like, why would you do this?
Yeah. Part of it is just being, I don't know, there's something about being a young male, like,
that was junior high, to be fair. Yeah. Yeah. There's something about being a junior high age male.
Just the impulsiveness. I mean, I just remember just like growing up doing like the dumbest shit possible, that as soon as you do it, like the moment that you do it, the first thing you think is like, oh, why did I do that? You know?
Yeah.
Like, you just, I don't know what's you wrong with like the male, young male brain. Not that like the older male brain is any better, but at least we like are willing to stop and think about something before we do something incredibly stupid.
Well, you know how it is. I mean, we're talking about like there's another set of friends we have where it's like dangerous to be with them somewhere because they'll just start like talking the kind of shit that's going to get them beat up, and like you're there with them. Like I would, like that was never my problem at all. You know, it's like always a matter of, for the most part, it's like how can you do something and not get caught, which goes against the story I just gave you with like doing it in front of the principal's face. But like, but there's that. But yeah, I think it's just like flirting with trouble, you know, like wanting to do what you're not supposed to. It's instantly more entertaining than something that's expected of you or whatever. Yeah. So back
it's
to
like
take
those,
it.
It's like the kids, you know, when you ask him, who would you want to play as, the Federalists or the Anti-Federalists? Oh, the Anti-Federalists. Yeah. You know, why? Because it's anti.
That was interesting. That no one is going to admit to, it's just a typical thing, right? No one wants to admit to like a gap in their knowledge or something.
Yeah.
So instead of saying, I really don't know the difference between the two, it's like, oh, definitely the Federalists. And the same way of like, yeah, dude, you get to bomb Libya. I mean, we could have been like, you know, this mission, you control it. Like you're on the head of the bomb. You get to guide it right to its target. It's like, as long as you don't tell them that what the target was.
Yeah.
Like that sounds great, man.
Honestly,
like,
that was a gap in my knowledge. When you first told me that, I was like, "What?
Oh,
I don't know."
It's not really funny when you tell it for what it is, but just the absurdity of, like, yeah, the most inappropriate game.
Yeah,
because
I guess the bomb hit Gaddafi's niece,
adopted niece, and ended up killing his adopted niece. So yeah, now we've ruined it. It's no longer funny. Just last night, I started babbling about Jab, the John Afro band, and I was like, I called Robert. I was asking you, like, if you had some means to get like a cassette tape onto digital, so I could put it online and share with everyone. And then as I was telling everyone in Ventrilo about this, and this being that, like, one of my friends in college is he grew up in, what is it, Palm Desert, and he would go back, you know, on like one weekend a month or something. And some guy that he had gone to high school with, well, this one friend, Anthony Sestich, and then, was like, you know, playing drums or something. And Mike played guitar, but they got this guy from their high school named, Mon Plaisir. And he's a Haitian guy, but he had brain damage cause he was in a coma after being hit by a truck, or so the story went. And he was a singer. He wanted to be the singer for this band. They made this, they cut this tape. The thing is fucking crazy. It's like, his name is John. Oh yeah, John was his other name outside of his Haitian name. Yeah. And then, so he had like a song, it's just like called John and On and On and On. And it's like, he's just like, I'm John and On and On and On and On and On and On and On. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm John and On and On and On and On.
Was it like hardcore music?
Yeah, totally hardcore.
It kind of sounds like a punk hit. And like a totally big.
The raddest thing is he had these just like, just delusions of grandeur and talking about how, you know, he's like, who's the tough guy? John. Who's the hot shot? John. Who's the muscle man? John. I'm John Afro and I break your leg. And then like start screaming and shit. And meanwhile, they said it was creepy as hell watching him sing, because you take his shirt off and he's a really big dude and he'd just be like rocking back and forth and like sweating profusely, screaming and stuff. And another rad idea is that they had him cover Louie Louie, which is like infamously unintelligible. Yeah. And he didn't know the lyrics, of course, either. So it was like doubly awesome for him to be doing a cover of that. And another song was called Gordy, and it was about Anthony's dog, I think, and how he like jacked it off one time. But so, okay, as I'm telling about these songs, I'm just like remembering. Hey, dude, another one, Kelly and Ali, is because one of them had pictures of these girls from their school, you know, after, you know, they'd graduated, Kelly and Ali, and they convinced them to, you know, get naked and get in the shower and make out. And he took some pictures. So they showed John Afro this, and that was like the really good shit for him, you know? So he had a song about them and what he wanted to do with them. And then also the main song to bring it together is one called Post Office. And that's because his dad was really protective, understandably so, and didn't want him really hanging out with anyone.
Yeah.
Because Lord knows he'd end up with Mike and Anthony, who had convinced him to be the singer of their band. And so he was allowed to go to the post office. So that was his alibi for everything. If he'd want to go to steal some cigarettes, he'd go to the post office. If he wanted to go to smoke some bud, he'd go to the post office. If he wanted to go record an album, it was the post office. So the song is just like, post office is the place I go to smoke some bud, to check the mail. Post office is the place I go to steal some cigarettes, to get weed. But so, okay, as I'm wrapping up the story, all of a sudden, I hear it. And I was like, holy shit, what the fuck is that? Who's doing that? And as I told it, they started searching online, and sure enough, they found a MySpace for it. So someone in the band put four of the songs up And you can hear him. So it's under Jab, like the John Afro band.
MySpace.com/Jab, right?
Yeah. But it's missing all the other songs and then the extended interview afterwards. So it's still worthwhile for me getting this put. And the quality of mine, I think, is probably better. But getting this up there because some of these songs are classics.
Nice.
I go to the post office, the post office. Every time that I need something, I go to the post office, the post office. Any time that I need some help, I go to the post office, the post office. Post office is the place I go to spot somebody, to check the mail. The post office is the place I go to drink some beer, to do something. The post office is the place I go to steal some cigarettes, to do something. Every time that I need a friend, I go to the post office, the post office. Any time that I need some friends, I go to the post office, the post office. The post office is the place I go to check the mail, to drink some beer. The post office is the place I go to smoke some bud, to steal some cigarettes. The post office, the post office, the post office, the post office. Anytime I need a friend, I go to the post office, the post office. Anytime I'll see Anthony, I go to the post office, the post office. Anytime that I look for something, I go to the post office, the post office. Post office is the place I go to visit some friends, to get meeting. The post office is the place I go to smoke some pot, to pay some bills, to steal some cigarettes. Yeah, 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 yeah.
This One Up podcast is brought to you by Hail to the Chimp from Gamecock Media. Hail to the Chimp is a fast-paced party game about 10 animals fighting to become the next ruler of the animal kingdom. Packed with bare-knuckle brawling, lush interactive environments, and a talking woodchuck, it's the best selection you'll see this year. Available June 24th on PS3 and Xbox 360.